I just love language. I love the fact that we have a number of words for collective nouns that seem so unabashedly arbitrary and strange. A murder of crows, a covey of quails, a sleuth of bears, a rafter of turkeys. Okay, maybe a rafter is logical. You could see a rafter filled with turkeys, but a clue of worms, a walk of snails. We owe so much to our hairy English ancestors who made these things up. I like to imagine them in their caves and Cotswolds and hunt clubs. There's a charming children's book called A Cache of Jewels by Ruth Heller. I enjoy sharing it with my students to think about how lovely an invention a language is. What an amazing human construct is a language. What a work of communal art. What a labor of collective love. Let's make up some collective nouns right now. I'll give you a noun and you come up with the collective bit. It's easy if you think of the action that the noun does and then make it a noun. Yeah. Raise your hands. Politicians. Yes, a gaggle of politicians. I came up with a clutch. Lobbyists. Yes.
A squawk.
A squawk of lobbyists. Teachers. Yes. And amazingly awesome. Of course it fits. It's a human construct. I came up with a patience of teachers. Corporations. Yes. A conspiracy of corporations. Gwen. Oh. Yes. A spew of corporations. I came up with a rampage, a singularity. Isn't this fun? And it doesn't cost a thing. Brew pubs. Yes. A cloud nine of brew pubs. Oh, yeah.
A slosh.
A slosh. Yeah. A burp. I came up with a quaff. We know that a collective noun for a group of religious people is a congregation. We share that with alligators, by the way. I'd like to propose a collective noun for our particular denomination, an appreciation of Unitarian Universalists. Now, some might say that a gratitude of UUs would be a better term. Appreciation and gratitude are closely linked, and some might prefer the sound of gratitude as a collective noun. We can show both our gratitude and our appreciation, so the terms would appear to be interchangeable. Gratitude comes from grace, and grace means a gift unmerited. I love that concept, an undeserved gift, grace. But I like appreciation as a word to describe UUs because the concept derives from a verb and not a noun, which means it involves action. One must appreciate. You have to do something. Grace can and often does come to you from an unseen hand. There is no verb form. You don't grace. You don't grateful. You don't gratitude. Those are a noun, an adjective, and a noun, respectively. But to appreciate is a verb. Appreciation requires human action. And the nice thing about this verb is that it has both a transitive and intransitive form. What a bunch of grammar geeks. Holy cow. In the transitive form, when a person appreciates someone or something, they bestow value on a thing or a person. They set a price, appreciate. But the verb can also be intransitive. In other words, it can operate without a direct object. A house can appreciate in value. A painting's value appreciates over time. We can appreciate a painting, transitive. A painting can appreciate, intransitive. It's a magical thing. A congregation can appreciate its member. A congregation's value can appreciate. One describes the transference of action, hence transitive, the other is self-evincing. It does not involve transference of action. The thing does for itself, intransitive. A healthy congregation appreciates in value and its members. The two are so closely linked as to be almost mystical. Maybe a congregation appreciates in value in direct proportion to how well it appreciates its members. A congregation is only as good as it does. And isn't that just and right? Back to the purpose before our congregation today, appreciation. We are here to abet creation and to witness to it, to notice so that creation need not play to an empty house. Basically, we're here to appreciate indiscriminately, profligately, luxuriously. I have always liked that statement by Annie Dillard, the idea that God, that the Creator is playing for an audience, and as an audience, it's our sacred duty to appreciate. You've been in an audience, no doubt, that is flat and unimpressed, or you've performed before an audience that doesn't respond as you'd like, and in turn your performance suffers, and then the audience is less entertained, and then your performance suffers, and you get the idea. I love the idea that God is like a performer needing the audience to improve the quality of her performance. I love that idea. All the world's a stage takes on a whole new meaning then. All the world is a stage, and the men and women are not merely players, as Jaques would have it. We're the audience, and we're an empowered and empowering audience. The quality of the audience affects the quality of the performer. When we appreciate God, God appreciates. There's the enigmatic relationship again, transitive and intransitive, verb of action, verb of being. All this is to say nothing of another word in the title of today's sermon, sacred. This spring I've spent 4 weeks with Hamlet. I posed the question in relation to Hamlet, what is sacred? I gave my students a bunch of famous quotations involving the word sacred and had them put them into categories. They came up with the usual ones, family, honor, country, beliefs, vows. A pair of students eschewed the categories altogether. This is what they came up with. They said, any notion of things being sacred is a human construct, so we place them randomly within a human brain. Exactly. So we read the play, watching as Hamlet pretty much comes to the same conclusion, and then he dies, saying, the rest is silence. Hamlet is pretty existentialist for a 16th century guy. We decided that something is sacred when a person willingly sacrifices for it, gives something up, something important. I think one of the biggest sacrifices you can make today is to turn your back on the quick, easily obtained pleasure that is offered at every turn in our society and to turn instead to something that is an entirely human construct, that promises all the discomfort of messy human interactions and all the disarray of events hastily planned and for which you are asked to clean up at the last minute. What is this entirely human construct to which we bind ourselves? Church. Messy, erratic, humbling, frustrating, misguided, mindless, yes, but also mindful, guiding, fulfilling, elating, steadfast, beatific, beloved community. It's not like we do this church gig to get into heaven. We do this because people consecrate. They make and then they deem things sacred. We notice. Annie Dillard says we should learn to see with the keen eyes of the artist, or like the lover, to gaze on everything like the lover on her beloved. And we should be learning to love more profligately. We should learn to be a more appreciative audience. Therein lies the sacred. So today we come to notice, to bear witness to the fact that these people we acknowledge today made the sacrifices of time and the attention that might have gone to yet any other human endeavor, but that they lovingly chose to give to us, to this collective noun called a congregation, what I'm calling an appreciation of Unitarian Universalists. The selection of those we honor today is as logical and as arbitrary as the origin of those names for collective nouns. They are a logical choice because every one of these folks has contributed in significant ways, and they are now pulling back from this engagement, making room for new people. Cue the audience. It is arbitrary in that we might have chosen any number of people to honor today. So, let me turn the spotlight onto them. Today, they are our stars. First, we'll start on the ground, literally the dirt. Let me acknowledge Barbara Alexander. For years, I don't have her picture. Hers is the only one, and she is out of town today. So imagine Barbara. For years, Barbara has labored in the vineyard. A broad-brimmed hat and a broad smile to match, Barbara could often be found crouching in the flower beds. If you want to know why the landscaping on our grounds is so thoughtful, you have Barb Alexander to thank in part. There's a line from a Gerard Manley Hopkins poem where he remarks on how a foot's pressure on newly turned soil can reveal sparkling silica flakes. He wrote, "Sheer plod makes plow down sillion shine." It may seem like digging in the dirt is inglorious work, but the flowers that break forth show their appreciation for Barb's tender care. Let us do the same. Thank you, Barbara. Staying on the ground, I'd like you to know Jolene and Patrick Scow, whose ministry for many, many years has also been to create the beauty we enjoy on our grounds. Jeremiah's Adventure Ground, that hillside that's planted in blooms and trees and that slopes down to the picturesque waterfall, we have because of the generosity of the Scows. Here's what Jolene has to say about the gift. We have been inspired to create Jeremiah's Adventure Garden as a legacy to our family. It embodies the serenity, inspiration, and joy we find in nature. It incorporates nature's diversity and beauty, and we hope that humans can learn from and appreciate these same differences in other humans. Jolene says that they so value our culture here at BOOF, with our care for all peoples, our social justice initiatives, and our generosity without expectation that people believe a certain way. As we celebrate those values, she hopes that children and adults alike will always awaken their senses to the pleasures of nature. That same poet, Hopkins, had this to say, "Let them be left. Oh, let them be left. Long live the weeds and the wilderness yet." Thank you for bringing the magic of the wilderness to our little corner of suburbia. And yet another member of the landscaping team has retired. Costin Frederick, who wooed his wife Judy here in our fellowship, wooed us all with his piano playing. Who can ever forget his rendition of Fanfare for the Common Man, or his boogie-woogie rendition of any song? Dapper in dress and erudite of speech, Causton also wooed the great green mowing machine. Though Alice, as the machine is known, was less impressed by his bow ties and love of letters, no doubt. Causton loves Walt Whitman, the poet of the leaves of grass. A child said, "What is the grass?" Fetching it to me with full hands, how could I answer the child? I do not know what it is any more than he. I guess it must be the flag of my disposition, out of hopeful green stuff woven. Or I guess it is a handkerchief of the Lord, a scented gift and remembrancer, decidedly dropped, bearing the owner's name some way in the corners, that we may see and remark and say, whose? Combining spirituality and grass, who besides Whitman could do that? Causton Frederick. Thank you, Causton. In olden days, what we call a building steward was once called a sexton, or even a sacristan. He was the custodian of sacred objects. He took care of the graveyard and would sit on the town council, back when there was only one church in a town. We first worshipped in this building on Christmas Eve, 1997, and our sexton ever since has been Warren Bean. He arrived early to set temperatures on thermostats and stayed late after events to set chairs in their proper places. He de-iced sidewalks and recycled papers. He swept and mopped and fixed and supplied. Warren has been steadfast with his commitment and dedicated to husbanding our resources wisely. If we consider our building full of sacred objects, and why not, then Warren has indeed been a sacristan. A poet once said, "Once work was wed to loveliness." Warren expressed his love for this place, for us, through his work, and did so with the loveliness of a craftsman. Thank you, Warren. There is an upright piano in one of the religious exploration rooms that has been around for over half a century. It was donated by Charlotte Tompkins and her late husband, Jim, back before Boof had either a minister or a music program. Back then, our early church patriarchs and matriarchs sang a cappella. This would not do. So Jim became the de facto lay minister, and Charlotte played the piano that they themselves had donated. Charlotte has never stopped playing music. There's an old song by Don McLean called "The Day the Music Died." We can thank Charlotte Tompkins that this has never come to pass at Boof. Not only has Charlotte played piano for us for over 50 years, but she also arranged the soloists for many years. And she has always been dedicated to showcasing the budding talent of the youthful musicians among us. Victor Hugo said, "Music expresses that which cannot be said and on which it is impossible to be silent." On this, Charlotte, we cannot be silent. Thank you for enriching our lives with music and so much more for so many years. The poet Marge Piercy says, "I want to be with people who submerge in the task, who go into the fields to harvest and work in a row and pass the bags along, who stand in the line and haul in their places." This poem describes the actions of someone who harnesses himself to the labors that need to be done. Don Schutte has a long history of having done this at Boof, conducting worship services and performing the duties of celebrant. He has served on the worship, personnel, bylaws, finance committees, the program ministry council, and the board. He has helped with religious exploration and has represented Boof and the Covenant of UU Pagans at General Assembly the year it was held in St. Louis. In her poem, Piercy goes on to say, "The work of the world is common as mud." We know that common mud is actually the stuff of stars. And Don's work has shone like stars. Thank you. Elaine Durbin has been a member of this fellowship for as long or longer than some of you have been alive. I'm sure she wishes that our congregation were made up of so many young adults that the statement would be true for the majority. For Elaine has deeply committed herself to this faith community and has guided and counseled and cajoled us into better behavior. We don't, many of us, believe in miracles, but there is one miracle that Elaine says she has witnessed. Our Sunday mornings have turned out to look less like a lecture series and more like a worship service. And that's fine with Elaine. She's too humble to believe in the omnipotent power of the human intellect alone. And Elaine knows that a religion free from dictates and dogmas is perpetually a work in progress. And this is the beauty. It is a human task done collectively by friends and alternating between work and rest and rejoicing. The poet Wendell Berry says this about building community. The love and the work of friends and lovers belong to the task and are its health. Rest and rejoicing belong to the task and are its grace. Let tomorrow come tomorrow. Not by your will is the house carried through the night. Elaine knows that our religious community is built by an accumulation of goodwill across generations, silting down layer upon layer, growing closer to the stars. For helping us grow up to the stars, we thank Elaine Durbin. If she could put a value on wit, Bessie Labuddy would be a millionaire, and she would probably give away most of it. Plain speaking and outspoken, Bessie can deflate an overpuffed ego, and yet she humbly and tenaciously served as a leader for our social justice causes for years. Bessie's humility and service brings to mind a poem by Naomi Shihab Nye called Famous, which says, I want to be famous in a way a pulley is famous or a buttonhole. Not because it did anything spectacular, but because it never forgot what it could do. Let's not forget Bessie, what Bessie has done, quietly and dutifully, in service to our community. Bessie is in the hospital today, but she knows she is being honored for the many gifts she has given us. And if we're able, we're going to set up a Skype connection for the reception in Green Grove following the second service today. You are all invited, so plan to come. Go out and have brunch, come back, for strawberry shortcake and lemonade and a brief celebration of our booth stars. In his poem, Life of Sundays, the poet Rodney Jones writes as an outsider musing about what he is missing by not going to church anymore. Down the street, someone must be praying. And though I don't go there anymore, I want to at times, to hear the diction and the tone, though the English pronoun for God is obsolete. What goes on is devotion, which wouldn't change if I heard the polished sermon. The upright arpeggios of vacant notes. What else could unite widows, bankers, children, and ghosts? Indeed. That's a pretty disparate group, and yet by her grace and acceptance and kindness, Mary Osterman could make them feel welcomed and listened to. In our church, some committees call for executive decision-making. Some call for an understanding of assets. Some call for an understanding of the elements of liturgy. Mary's gift is her attunement to others. And so she has served in the caring committees, like the congregational care team. She has a quiet, reassuring presence. Mary is an embodiment of, in the poet's words, devotion. Mary is devoted to compassion. For the many ways she has devoted herself to our community, we appreciate Mary Osterman. The poet Denise Levertov has written a poem praising the mysterious interconnected web. Mysteriously, Patricia and I both chose it. intricate and intraceable, weaving and interweaving dark strand with light, designed beyond all spiderly contrivance to link, not to entrap. Elation, grief, joy, contrition entwined, shaking, changing, forever forming, transforming. All praise to the great web. This poem is a reflection of what it means to belong to a religious institution, which we surely are, woven together, bound together, but not bound down. Jane Breckenridge is uniquely suited to help construct that web. Exquisitely skilled and attuned to the structures that help people thrive, Jane helped lead this church through the transition from a series of disjointed jobs that guide a small church to the expansive sense of ministry that invigorates a large and growing one. She brought clarity to policies and helped us solidify the functions of the Program Ministry Council. Now, this contribution may seem esoteric and abstract, but Jane knows that muddled lines of communication and under-articulated policies result in hurt feelings and in wounds that may not heal, that in the past have not healed and caused much pain. Jane guided us through this phase. All praise to the great web and the great web maker, Jane Breckenridge. Blessed are the man and the woman who have grown beyond their greed and have put an end to their hatred and no longer nourish illusions. So begins the poem, Psalm 1, by Stephen Mitchell. And I have chosen this poem to reflect on our final honorees today, Mary and Alan Schwartzman. Not that they had any more greed or hatred or illusions to overcome than any of the other human beings, except maybe Alan, but they have surely grown to be the closest thing to Booth sainthood that we have. The two of them are a church in and of themselves. They have filled every committee and chaired even more, supported the building and remodeling of buildings, the purchasing of land, and the retiring of mortgages. They have mowed lawns, planted seeds, mentored youth, sung in the choir under a dozen choir directors, brought up two children in the faith, hosted parties and seders, and instituted the tradition of the 12 days of Christmas. Mary has brought a grace and a thoughtful, reverent regard to everything she does, and Alan has provided the irreverent humor. If you know their story, you know that Mary was raised in rural Christianity and Alan in urban Jewish culture, and they embrace this community with a tenacity and loyalty that has endured all manner of conflict and controversy. And they have stayed. They are as rooted as the trees in our grove. As the poem goes on to say, they are like trees planted near flowing rivers, which bear fruit when they are ready. Their leaves will not fall or wither. Everything they do will succeed. And indeed, you have brought much success to this once little, now growing fellowship. Thank you, Mary and Alan. So let us be inspired by the gifts our friends and so many of us here this morning have brought before us. In the words of an anonymous prayer, May we be reminded here of our highest aspirations and inspired to bring our gifts of love and service to the altar of humanity. May we know once again that we are not isolated beings, but connected in mystery and miracle to the universe, to this community, and to each other. May we become our own collective noun. An appreciation of Unitarian Universalists. May it be so.